to another episode of the Comic Book Legion podcast, Quarantine Edition, where we don't know what day it is, we're reading a lot more Marvel, and I'm voluntarily reading a little bit more Bendis lately.
Bendis!
And that is my co-host, Mark.
What's up?
How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I don't know, man. I'm again, like I said last week, I mean, being home as me being a homebody, like, I'm not really going nuts. For me, I'm kind of just, like, selfishly dreading when, because I know my wife, who is an outdoorsy, needs to go hiking in mountains and doing all this kind of stuff. I know that my life personally is going to suck when quarantine is over, because I'm never going to be home. But I can't complain, because I've been in the house for, or hotel, like in Ohio. I mean, I've literally been confined for weeks. So
now, see, we are definitely staying within the rules of our shelter in place, but I will say there has been some weak moments where we would like to have something that is not cooked by us. So we have been, I think we did it twice already, we did order out. Now, the first time we ordered out, my wife said, get in the car. And I was like, okay. Like, it got delivered to us, but we got in the car. She told me to drive to a park, and she said, okay, park, leave the car running. I just want to eat right here. And I was like, okay. She's like, I just need to see the outside.
Yeah.
But it was so depressing because, you know, the park had, like, all this caution tape and everything. So, it, like, we saw people in the distance because it was, like, it was one of those parks that is mainly just, like, a walking trail, which yeah. Those can stay open. Now, I believe our restrictions here in the city have since, like, closed those down. But they were open at the time, and so we were just sitting, watching, like, two random people walk around the entire thing, watching the caution tape like breeze into the wind. It was very freaking Walking Dead, like, just it was ominous. And it was like, oh, okay, I'm just gonna eat my burger, just chilling in my car. Okay.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you see, know,
like my wife won't even risk it. Like she wouldn't even do that. So,
well, my we stopped doing that. And because I told you that we ordered curbside for our groceries this week. We finally got them yesterday. And the big thing was, my wife ordered, like, I would want to say, like, maybe half a pound to a pound of brisket. And she's like, okay, this should be enough. Oof. And then she contemplated and contemplated and contemplated. She's like, you know what? I'm going to get the next one up on the actual, like, our grocery store is called HEB. So she got the next one up. Now, pound, quarter to a pound, probably about this big. You know, I'm putting my hands up about the size of a football. Now, when she ordered the next one up, we finally got to the curbside pickup, and it was on the bottom part of the cart, and it was half the size of the desk that I'm on right now. It was huge. Oof. Yeah. So we ended up going to a family member's house way out in the country just because they were needing some human interaction. And we spent 6 hours cutting and cooking all of the brisket so that way we could freeze it. And then
brisket sounds amazing. I mean, I've been grilling every single day, so, but man, but brisket.
It was nice because we had a little bit of it for dinner. Oof. But during those 6 hours, you know, we couldn't really do anything. But that family member had found a, like, really small type of grocery store, like, way off in the distance, like, probably about an hour and a half away. And she took my wife, and I was going to go with them, but they're like, hey, we may not have enough room in the car because of how many groceries we're getting. Why don't you just stay here since you haven't had time, like, for yourself, like, all by yourself? And I was like, that sounds good. Yeah. Yeah, I'll do it. I'll do it. They left. I opened my Marvel Unlimited app. I read, like, maybe an issue and a half of, like, a Gambit series that I've been reading. And then I fell asleep. So I didn't even get to, like, enjoy my time on my own. I just took a nap. And I was like, eh, all right.
Well, I mean, whatever. I mean, you don't sleep anyways, so... I mean, I guess...
Yeah, it was probably something I really needed,
yeah,
to
take
be honest.
Take the Z's when you get it. I've been really enjoying... I think, for me, not having, like, these review copies and not doing, like, new books, I think it's been really, like, cathartic reading books that I read in the past that made me fall in love with comic books. Because I don't know, I guess there's a little bit of a, there's like a novelty of just going back to like reading as a fan. Cause right now there's no longer like, oh, this is press getting press copies. It's not about that anymore. Yeah. So it's kind of like you start to see yourself reverting back to doing some of the things you did back in the past. And it's been really refreshing. And reading the book that we were talking about, that we're going to be talking about today, which is, I mean, we'll talk about whatever, like just random stuff, but the book that's featured is House of M. And
yes,
you know, thank you to so many people, because I know that I posted on Twitter and I had a lot of recommendations, and a lot of them were good and a lot of them were tempting. I know it's Dominic. I want to say it's like Dominic Purdy. He really got me interested in Spider-Man Blue. That one I was really... I'm like Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale. That's kind of like a...
Oh, yeah, it was a Jeff Loeb book.
I'm like, okay, right. You know what? That's a really... It seems like... I didn't get to see when that book was written, but based on the creative team, it kind of just makes me feel that this was all during Jeff Loeb's Long Halloween, Dark Victory, maybe, kind of days.
Uh-huh.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know, man. It was really good. But House of M. I know that when I posted that we were going to do this book, or I think you posted it, that we were going to do the book, we had like a good, like a healthy balance of, oh, man, like that's a great story. And then I know that I have, his name's Steven, and I know that he's kind of like a pessimist, but I don't know. Uh-huh. I find it funny. And he's like, because I know that he loves the X-Men. I think the X-Men are his absolute favorite. And then besides that, it's just like indie comics. So, and he kind of mentioned like, well, if you can call House of M a story. And I was like, oh, snap, Steve. And I don't know, man. I read the book. It's kind of hard when you didn't read the stuff beforehand. Because I didn't read Excalibur.
So that was the big thing, and that has been the big thing with me diving into Marvel Unlimited. I'm like, I literally have no starting point and no, like, goal for the stories that I want to read. So I'm literally going to, like, there's a tab for characters, there's a tab for stories, there's a tab for creators, there's a tab for events. So I've literally just been like, let's think of, like I said before, Gambit. And so I just look at Gambit, and then I look at all of his solo series, and then I look at, like, okay, will 80s and 90s be a little bit too cringe? Let's see where the, like, more modern stuff is right now, and I'll read, like, the most recent series, and then, like, maybe go back to something a little bit older. That's what I've been doing. But literally, if you look at my library, because you can save it to your library to read later. There, like, it's all over the place. As far as, like, if you think of it as, like, the Marvel timeline, it is all over the place. I haven't picked anything specifically for, you know, specific reasons. So, it can be a little confusing when you dive into a book and you're like, I don't know the context of any of this.
Yeah, so, I mean, the finding, like, the little nuances within the book was a little tough to follow. But, I mean, again, I could have... I knew that Excalibur was kind of like... They had, like, a two-issue arc right before it. So, I mean, I could have just read that to get a little bit more of an idea. But, you know, I didn't feel like doing that. but it's like, yeah, man, reading House of M... I don't know, man. It was refreshing. It was refreshing when you now that you get to that you know these characters a little bit more. It was really nice to see. I mean, okay, how about this? Like, surface level thoughts. What did you think of? I mean, because I know you always say that you go into a book, especially now like a Bendis book, wanting to like it. Now you actually wrote. I don't know if you wrote this on Twitter or you wrote this on the chat with me, just like our text messaging, where you mentioned, holy crap, I like a Bendis book.
Yes.
Was that to me personally or was that on Twitter?
That was to you personally because I was going to wait until the actual episode to talk about this. Now, I genuinely read issues 1 through 5 all at once, like nonstop. I just kept on wanting to go through it because of how interesting the story was. Now, when this issue 1 starts, I immediately like remember what House of M was supposed to be, or what House of M is, because everybody's heard of, especially now if you read the current X-Men, they had like one issue or maybe two issues talking about the stuff that has happened with Scarlet Witch. Now, it clicked, and I was like, oh man, this is that
story. Wait, so is Hickman touching on this?
He is touching
on... I mean, I bought the House of X. Oh, hey, crap, look at that House of X. I never thought of that. I never put that together. Funny.
Yeah.
no, because I have the... Jesus Christ, that's horrible. But yeah, that's funny. Okay, yeah,
no,
go ahead.
They're playing on the event, like, because... Spoilers. Gonna jump to the end of issue 8 real quick. Scarlet Witch says no more mutants. And that, you know, basically, it doesn't kill mutants, it just takes away their powers. Now, on the current X-Men run, what Hickman has done is he's basically made a way, and I'm still trying to catch up, you know, I jumped into the middle of it and then moved forward. I am planning on, because I still haven't read the it's not House of X. It's actually
Power of X or whatever. POX?
Oh yeah. It's House of X and Powers of 10. That's what it is.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, Roman numerals, whatever. But the whole point, somewhere in the origin or whatever Hickman has written, he's basically made a way for mutants to kill each other or themselves or whatever. And they get reborn with their powers.
Okay.
And it has something to do with, like, cloning, but not really. I'm still learning. I'm still learning, so don't crucify me, please. But that's basically it. But they talked about, there was a history lesson with with one of the mutants talking to the children, all the children mutants, and they said, why do we do this? It was basically a ritual that they do by combat called, I think it's a crucible, the crucible.
Yeah.
Which is, they basically have to fight Apocalypse, and Apocalypse works with them. And basically, hey, if you win the right, we will kill you and you will be reborn with your powers. And
okay.
In that history lesson, they talk about Scarlet Witch, and she is somebody who they no longer consider a real mutant. So whenever I realized that this was that story, I got really excited because, okay, this is something that a lot of X-Men books have deeply played with moving forward. So I was like, okay, you know, my hype.
So did Hickman end up, I guess, not rewrite, like, not maybe not retconning, but does Messiah Complex, does that stuff still count?
I believe it does. Yes.
Okay.
So
because I was actually interested in wanting to, like, once I got into the story, I kind of want to get into that, you know, Decimation, Messiah, Utopia, what, you know, all that
the
other.
The Hickman run seems a bit dense from what I have read.
I mean, what now, isn't will, dense by with Hickman?
True, really true. But a lot of people were worried when he first got announced for this X-Men run that it was going to be another reboot, that it was just going to be some nonsense. But instead of just a genuine reboot, he is legitimately trying to take as much history from the X-Men as possible.
So he
rebirthed and making a really... Yes. Yeah. He really has.
Okay.
Yeah. So he Geoff Johns it, and it has actually turned out pretty cool. Now, I will be really excited when he finally has a story with Dazzler. Dazzler is, for some reason, one of my favorite X-Men. I don't know why.
That's the singer, right?
Yeah. She's the rock star.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is what it is. I'll wait. I'll patiently wait because he has been writing some really cool books.
Did you read her, so, like, didn't Dazzler have, like, a one-shot recently by Mags? Visaggio?
I don't know.
I feel like
I know.
Like, I don't know if it was a one shot or like a mini story arc.
It was a one shot that I believe led into Matthew Rosenberg's Astonishing X-Men.
Yeah, probably sounds about right.
And then Astonishing X-Men ended with the beginning of Matthew Rosenberg's X-Men run, and then that ended when Hickman wanted to write the whole rebirth or whatever. So I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, when Matthew Rosenberg wrote his Astonishing X-Men, he had Greg Land do the covers, and he did he did covers and interiors, and he did an awesome design for Dazzler. It just looked awesome. I actually really liked it. But with this book, House of M, Brian Michael Bendis, I applaud you. This is genuine words from my mouth. This is a Kevin Safe podcast.
Timestamp this, please, somewhere.
I really like this. Now, there is some things that I could nitpick, like his repeating of words. Like, he loves to repeat. He loves to have characters repeat their words, but this wasn't like a Young Justice where they're doing it 17 times by one person in one panel. This was a, you know, somebody repeated themselves once and then they moved on. Like, it was something that I could just kind of like just shrug off my shoulders. Okay, let's move on with this story. There was quite possibly maybe one or two things that I felt like wasn't a part of a character, but because of the circumstances that they were in, these characters, you know, being in this like self-made reality of Scarlet Witch, I could chop it up to, okay, you know, this is how they ended up in this world. And also, they're very angry once they find out. So I can understand some decisions. I liked it. High-level thoughts. I liked it.
Yeah, I would say the one thing that... I mean, my knowledge in Marvel, especially when I was first reading comics, I would say for a long portion, I was reading it only for entertainment purposes, and I was perfectly fine with not having to, you know, remember things. I was reading it for the entertainment and I enjoyed the stories. So for a long time in my reading, I never really cared. And to this day, I'm sure everyone knows from listening to the show, I'm not a stickler with continuity. I am at times. Yeah. If it's like current, or if you're going to force feed continuity in my face by you saying it's going to be it, then you notice it. Okay, it's worth bringing up. But on normal times, I kind of find continuity to be like a really big handcuff sometimes on creativity. So I'm okay with little loose things. So I'm reading this story, and there's a lot of things I don't remember. I kind of remember the threads of, you know, that this was something that Wanda started, and then she was ended up being like manipulated to do something, and the heroes have to figure it out. Sweet.
Yeah.
I remember that. Everything in between, don't remember anything. What the first thing that popped up in my mind was Oh man, I feel like I need to see JMS Thor again, because JMS Thor for a long time was drawn by Oliver Coipel, who's yeah. the artist here, and there are many moments in this book where Captain America, I'm telling you, like if you see those far looks. Things, very Rob Liefeld,
yeah.
And there's actually one. I wish I had it digitally, like the page. But when you actually see one of the first times Captain America is inside the conference room, and you see the way that he is built, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is Rob Liefeldish. And I did not remember Coipel, because the last time I remember Coipel's work is maybe. I mean, I know he's done covers for DC, but I remember that he was in Action Comics 1000, and I believe he's the one that did the story with Geoff Johns, the car. And when you see body anatomies from there to here, I was kind of thrown off by that. I was like, wow, this does not look like this does not look like the same artist. But with the story, I really enjoyed it. I mean, it kind of felt a little bit like Days of Future Past. You know, like the movie with Wolverine trying to figure some things out and things being a little wonky. I mean, I don't know why. I got some elements here of, in a sense, not exactly, but kind of like a Heroes in Crisis.
Yeah.
You know, like, like you could kind of see where, oh, man, I can kind of see like where they're picking some threads from past stories, and I can kind of see some similarities to stories that we're reading today. So those were little things.
Scarlet Witch is very much the Wally West character.
Yes. So I enjoyed it. I really did. I thought that this book had a lot of stakes in it. Like it felt like there were a lot of stakes. And I'll be honest, although I knew when that moment was going to come, when you see Wanda going face to face with Magneto and she's confronting him and she says the three words. Like that to me, I felt it. Like,
oh yeah.
Like I knew it, but that there was so much tension and everything going on, even with the speech with Cyclops, understanding that they cannot lose here. So whatever
that
restraints,
kind of, like I was impressed. Okay. Now, like I said, with Bendis writing this book, I wanted this to be good. I was very interested in it. But my, like, Superman action part of the brain was like, there's going to be one thing that ruins this entire book. There's going to be that one thing.
I mean, because in this way, he did those jokes, but he did it more subtle. Kind of like when, was it Jessica? Who was mentioning, he's like, you know, our lives are great. Didn't we get exactly what we wanted? And you have Wolverine saying, you're going to be really embarrassed that you said that.
Yeah, like, what did he say? He said something like, you're going to be really embarrassed you said that. And then she said something again, and then he's like, okay, that's two things you're going to be really embarrassed that you said.
Yeah, so, but it was done in a sense, I'm trying to see if I can find it, but it's, in those ways, I was like, you know what, that felt subtle and clever. Oh, here it is. One day, Jesse, you're really going to be embarrassed you said that out loud. And then she spoke again. He goes, that's two things you're going to be embarrassed that you said out loud. But I don't know why. I felt like in the context of everything, because I feel like in this story, it makes sense that everyone is a little out of character because of the situation that they're going through. So is it a little odd that maybe Logan is the one that said it? Maybe, but I don't know why. But you could kind of see in this entire story, Peter is being extremely fearful, irrational. I mean, you saw
Peter.
Look at what his life was, and then he remembered.
That,
I mean, married to Gwen.
That hurt me.
There you got
married
Uncle Ben.
Married with
Gwen,
had a kid, and still had Uncle Ben. That crushed me. That actually hurt.
Yeah,
and to the point where when everything seemed to be okay, everything was, you know, back to normal. They went back to the Avengers Tower, and he begged Doctor Strange to get rid of all the memories.
Yeah, that was tough.
It was rough, and I applaud Bendis for using that emotion, like for using that type of writing for a character that he was very famously, you know, on a long run for. Now, that's something else. At this time, well, at the time we're recording, the podcast should be live in about an hour and a half for my Fanboy Comics podcast, but I'm reading Ultimate Spider-Man.
Nice.
I actually enjoy that as well.
You like, volume one?
Yeah, I am reading...
Ultimate Spider-Man is... I mean, again, you know I'm a big fan of JMS and what he did with Spider-Man. I would say, in terms of continuity, JMS's Back in Black and all that kind of stuff is my favorite Spider-Man stuff. But in terms of overall favorite Spider-Man run, I would say that Bendis's... I mean, what he did with Mark Bagley was... Like, Ultimate Spider-Man is what made me Team Gwen. Because, again, me jumping into comic books, I have no idea who Gwen Stacy was. So I only know Gwen Stacy because of Ultimate Spider-Man. So I was 100% like Team Gwen because of Ultimate Spider-Man.
Nice.
Which was a bummer with, you know, how she died with on the hands of the Green Goblin. But, yeah, it was...
Spoilers! I mean, it's, like, what, 18 years old now?
Yeah. Oh, wait.
Something like that?
You know, I thought, like, you've already read it. You were, like, rereading. That's why I was kind of loose there.
No, Well, the thing is, Ultimate Spider-Man, because it's so old, I already know some of, like, the biggest points of Ultimate Spider-Man. I have not read the entire thing all the way through. Okay. Now, I have read, because way back in the day... when it was very easy to find trades of Ultimate Spider-Man. I remember reading one in a Barnes & Noble while my mom was like looking for books. I just went to the comic section and started reading it. I think I read the entire first two volumes. Now, I was a little kid back then. I think I was in like maybe sixth grade. So I'm not entirely sure how much I remember. But for the most part, whenever I read... I read the first five issues for the episode that comes out today. I was genuinely, like, okay with everything that was in there, honestly. There was some nitpicks, like the dialogue, because there are some points where Bendis goes a little bit crazy with the dialogue. He doesn't do that too much here in House of M. Now, I will say, where did you read this?
What do you mean? Like, where in my house?
House of M. No. Like, did you read it, like, on a laptop? Did you read it on a tablet?
I read it on the tablet.
Okay. So, did you have a hard time reading some of the splash pages on this title?
In the sense that, like, they don't show the entire splash page where you have to, like, make sure that you're scrolling down?
No. There's, at some points, now, this may just be showing my age, but I believe in issue, right here, I think it's issue 7. Issue 7, there's a huge fight scene with almost everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading this, I think, at the time, because issue 7 was... I read the first five issues on my tablet, and then I went to bed and read 6 and 7. And so I was on my phone on 7. I had to zoom in as much as I could to read the dialogue on
the splash page. I will say on that one, yes, the splash page, I think it's because they put those two pages together on one frame. They had to, like, I think, zoom it out where it is much smaller. Because once you see, like, because it's literally the first page digitally is the splash page, and it's very small. And then when you go right to the next one where it's back to the standard format, the text is very large. So, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, so there was times where I'm just like...
I thought you meant that it didn't... Not everything fit in one...
There were some splash pages where, like, for dramatic effect, like, you had to, like, move the page or whatever, which I'm totally fine with, you know, if they do it correctly and it works out for that dramatic effect, I can totally understand it. This, you know, because, like I said, I was in bed, I didn't have my glasses on, I had to put the phone, like, basically right next to my eye and be like, okay, I am super old now. I look like my grandmother trying to play freaking Candy Crush. But, I was genuinely surprised by the twist in this book. There's two twists. One of them being with this little girl that they find. I wasn't so, like, shocked with that one. That one is a little bit more of a pet peeve because they never explain it. Now, they subtly somewhat explain it with, I believe, Emma Frost. She basically says that this little girl is basically a contingency plan that Scarlet Witch made in the universe.
Yes.
I can understand that because at heart, Scarlet Witch has always been and will always be a hero. Now, understanding that through this, we learn, because like I said, no context for when I dove into this book, but you know, you do find out that Hawkeye, Ant-Man, and I don't remember the third one, but she was responsible for the death of three Avengers.
Yeah.
So they are, you know, that's what this whole thing starts off with. Okay, she is dangerous. We need, like, the actual conversation that went down was very surprising to me. Now, I understand that Marvel and DC are very different whenever they come to handling villains. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't seem like they're very, you know, passive on the idea of killing somebody. Yeah. Whenever it comes to Marvel. So, having that conversation with the Avengers, with the X-Men, of, hey, should we put her down? That was dramatic. Like, it, like, I had to really sit down and think, holy crap, like, they are, like, the idea that Wolverine is thinking, okay, we may have to do this. I understand that.
No, because of the fact that Xavier is the one that brought...
That was the next one, because they asked him, is this really an option? Like, do we genuinely have to think about this? And when he says, I don't know if we can stop her, like, that's when you know, holy crap, like, that is the breaking point. When somebody who is legitimately your symbol of hope for all of mutants says, I don't know, also while he is a telepath, that is terrifying.
Yeah.
So,
it's also like when you see those moments with, like I mentioned later on in the book with Cyclops, it's just, it's crazy to me how, based on you hear the words that he is speaking here, and then you just, and you see, like, how far he fell before he died, like, later on.
Yeah.
Like in, I don't know, 2016, 2017, when, you know, before Bendis did the time travel, which was like the original five came back or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you hear me? Oh, sorry. The computer froze. I didn't know if you were still listening to me.
Yeah, no, like it came out like really, really fast, but I could still hear you. You're good. Oh,
gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So seeing kind of like where X-Men goes later on, I was like, man, it's just, I guess it was just nice to kind of see that classic Cyclops and just seeing, like, what a great leader he is. Because,
oh, yeah. I love Cyclops.
Because when I stopped reading X-Men, it was just one of those things, like, man, he was in such a bad place. Like, people legitimately hate Cyclops. So it was just nice. Like, this was at a time when I guess he was still, like, beloved. Although, you know, on Twitter, I mean, for some reason, people tend to hate characters that, you know, are popular, yeah, and they just like to go for the underdogs.
That is true. But I will say, considering where the X-Men are right now, Cyclops was right. Just going to say that. That is also something that I'm currently on my way to reading. The whole Avengers versus X-Men, and eventually we'll get to Schism and all that.
Well, that's what I was so excited by this book, that like I'm immediately going to continue, and I'm kind of digging this unlimited app.
Oh really?
Yeah, I'm digging it. I'm going to continue, and I'm going to do Decimation, and I'm gonna keep going. I want to know, because
nice.
I remember this was like my favorite X-Men was like my favorite stuff going on at that time, like when I was reading, because this was, man, I don't remember when Dark Reign happened. I guess it's when Bendis left X-Men, and then he decided to start doing like the New Avengers, because they talked a lot here about old Avengers and New Avengers.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if this like led, because I know before it was Avengers Disassembled, and that's another big Bendis story, I believe, right? He did Avengers Disassembled, right?
I believe he did.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, I think so. So, I mean, I don't know, man. This was just like, it was like a heyday. I felt like these were the prime Bendis years, which was his Ultimate Spider-Man stuff, his Avengers stuff, what he did here. Like, I felt like he had a really good, like, 6 years. But then, I think, kind of like what I believe my fear with, like, the Donny Cates, or even to some extent, like, what some people believe with, like, Scott Snyder, that it just seemed like everything that he was touching for a long period of time was absolute gold, that now, when he's not hitting those kind of peaks, it looks like, you know, you reached your level of peakness, and now you're kind of, like, at this state of, like, you know, like, has he lost, like, his juju? And that's one of the things that I'm kind of feeling that I think happened to Bendis and what's currently going on with him now, and what I think is happening to, unfortunately, because although Snyder's independent stuff is still, like, pretty awesome, I don't know. I mean, for the most part, I mean, I don't think too many people were fond of his Justice League run. I think it was a little too big.
Yeah, I mean, some people, I mean, there was great moments. I mean, I think one of our favorite Superman moments were in, well, I don't know. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. Sorry. I had a brain fart there. Yeah, but Justice League 25 was one of the, I mean, we both freaked out with the, you know, the sun dip Superman and having it to where, like, I freaking cried at work reading the review copy of that book. So, like, that book definitely held a, you know, a good part in my life. And I can say that Snyder, you know, did that for me. I can genuinely say that. I'll be like, oh yeah, he wrote that for me. And that was partly Jimenez doing that as well. But, you know, with the, I can say this about this book also. You know, you talked earlier about the whole Cyclops talking about how they can't lose. How, you know, they have to do whatever they need to in order to survive this and change everything back. And, you know, then, you know, you had the whole Jessica Drew, you know, kind of going back against it. Like, hey, we got everything we got because of Scarlet Witch. Like, how do you know this isn't, like, a gift in how we could just live our lives? I genuinely loved that at least somebody was hesitant to be like, hey, you know, when all of this comes, you know, to a curb or whatever, yes, we can't find Xavier, but we all got our dreams. You know, for a big part of this story and moving forward, Wolverine was legitimately able to remember his past, something that he was searching for so long. He genuinely was able to say, hey, I remember everything. And I thought that was really cool also, that this was not just a small event that Marvel could push out. It was something that they could legitimately build upon moving forward.
No, for sure. special times, man. It's, I would say reading this has made comics feel fun again, in a sense. And not that comics was, it's just that I guess when we were trying to do a niche, which is kind of like just strictly talking DC, and it's because I think for both of us, although we do love all media, like all forms of comics, I would say that our preferred and our biases tend to go more DC. But the thing is like if DC has a bad week, it's kind of like, ugh, this is what I focused on. And I don't know, it's just, and you know, DC has hit a snag as of late. So I don't know if it's because we strictly went from like, we went to a hit, a classic. So yeah. We're like, oh man, this is a good story. I mean, I'm sure if we did it with DC, if we went to another, you know, classic DC, you know, maybe that's what it is. We're just hitting the greatest hits and it kind of hits that, you know, that little nostalgic kind of thing. I don't know if maybe that's what I'm feeling, but I thoroughly had a really, really, really good time reading these 8 issues.
So did I. And I also, like, now, I would have loved to see what Captain America, how he would have reacted, the new Captain America that they see, because they see a Captain America that never got the super soldier serum, that never, you know, was frozen in ice. Yeah. He was a very
He was old. Yeah.
So, and even Emma Frost tells the little girl, like, oh, you know, power down. He's no use to us right now. I would have loved to seen, like, even the smallest interaction to see if he was still a hero at some point, you know? But I love how they were like, okay, we're not going to make us, like, ourselves too powerful with the entire Avengers. And they made it a little bit more personal with all of the mutants. And I love the twist with Scarlet Witch's brother, Pietro.
Yeah, Pietro. Yeah.
Yeah, that it was him that, you know, because the whole thing was that, okay, this is all Magneto's doing. This has Magneto written all over it. You know, he is now the ruler of the world, basically. He is the king. Like, this is all him. But when Doctor Strange finds out, you know, with talking with Scarlet Witch in her own little, like, mind palace, that, you know, it was him that convinced her to do all of this, it really showed the relationship of that family, of Magneto, of Scarlet Witch, of Pietro, and seeing what they would be willing to do. And I love the wisdom that Magneto has in all this. Like, it was not something that was their right to do. Because he does get angry at Pietro, and he does end up fighting. But that is the reason Scarlet...
He killed him. It's just that Scarlet Witch revived him. And I think that is when it looks like she had the epiphany that this is... that Pietro was right, and that this is all his doing, and then that's when we eventually got, you know, all these issues that we have is because of us being freaks, us being mutants. So, Dad, no more mutants. I was like, God! I don't know, man. I gotta say, man, you know what? Do you know who the colorist? Sorry, it's just that my iPad ended up dying, so...
But the colorist for this book is, maybe not. Hold on. Let me see if I can find a credits page.
Okay.
Because it only shows the penciler and the cover artist.
Okay. So, in that time, I gotta say, like, all those moments when you're having, like, the really big fights, when you're seeing the astral, like, when they're kind of, no, they weren't talking to the astral plane, but kind of like what you're talking about, the colors and the visuals getting there at the end, it was very... it was vibrant, it was beautiful, but it was scary, and it was bleak at the same time. So it's...
Yeah, so the colorist is Frank DiArmada with Paul Mounts.
Okay, all right, cool. Yeah, so I think that they did a great job, and then when you see Emma go to Cerebro to kind of see what's going on, and you see, like, she's like, this is on hyperdrive, and you just see very, like, very few dots. It's,
yeah.
I don't know, man. I felt it. And it's, I'm trying, and, dude, I wish I kind of so remember crushing. What my emotions were then.
It was so crushing when, like, you see all of the other mutants who had lost their powers at the actual Xavier Institute, and Bendis very subtly put it at, like, the end of one panel. There's a kid in the background that says, wait, are we still mutants?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And, like, the kid is genuinely, like, no, I don't want to lose this. Like, I don't want to be, I don't want to lose this family. Are we still mutants? And that crushed me also, dude. I genuinely love the writing in this book. Like, I...
Oh, yeah, she's like, wait, is the school going to be open? Are we still going to... Yeah, it was...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy.
And seeing Bobby not having any powers, mm-hmm. like, that hurt me as well. You know, Bobby is one of my favorite X-Men. I think more for the reason of him being the comic relief. I love him. And he's usually, like, genuinely funny. But I just... I don't know, man. This excites me to read, like, good Bendis, but it hurts me knowing where he's at now. You know?
I mean, it's... There's very few that can... Because, I mean, like, for example... It's very hard to think, like, oh, wow, you know, like... Some of these writers, like even Geoff Johns, like I even to me, I think like Geoff Johns is like Green Lantern run at the end, kind of like what he was doing in New 52. I think it was like time for him to end it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I think even the greats. I mean.
Oh yeah, no. I don't know. Like for me, genuinely, Flash 750, his little Captain Cold story. I didn't like it. Like I genuinely didn't like it.
Yeah,
so I understand that there's some duds. Now, Bendis, if you're listening to this, which I highly doubt, but if he finds this, look what you have done. You have House of M, you have Ultimate Spider-Man under your freaking table. There is a genuine story somewhere in the mythos of all of the DC books that you have, there is something there. Whether you need to be reminded to go back to Marvel Unlimited and read some of your stories or whatever, there is something there. And I want it to happen.
Now, do you think... Is it possible that just his writing is more attuned to Marvel characters? Or do you think that he coming here needing to make the impact, he took the reins of a character that for a very long time has had a distinct voice? And
I think so. But see, here's the thing. What he did in House of M, what he did with Ultimate Spider-Man, what he did with his Marvel characters that were good and genuine, I feel like he could very well be doing that with Young Justice. Now, look how successful the animated cartoon is of Young Justice. Now, I understand a lot of people take those voices and are, you know, that is their Young Justice, the cartoon. But because there has been such a large gap between one Young Justice in the 90s from now, I think Bendis could genuinely, instead of writing it as a joke, which ultimately, when you read a lot of Young Justice, it's full of jokes. Everybody's telling a joke. Everybody is. If he, like, cools down on the jokes and genuinely says, hey, I want to do something, like, and I feel like that is the big thing, what I'm about to say here, is I feel like a lot of these writers, after writing so many serious stories, they say, hey, I just want to have fun. Which I am totally okay with.
Now, do you have an issue going in that? Because kind of like what you're talking about, like it looks like he's just throwing jokes. Do you think that these 50-year-old plus should be writing teenagers?
I don't, to be honest. I think that with how they have been written, I think anybody could write any story. I'm not gonna, you know, shame. I'm not gonna. How would you even age shame? I guess I'm
not gonna age, not even an age shame. I just think that because I feel like there are many people who are good at connecting with young.
Yes.
I mean, I am 34 years old, and I feel like I can. Besides comics, when you say things, I have no idea what you're. I didn't even know what Netflix and chill meant. So I'm like, it's even for me. I find it hard to connect with like what my 27-year-old brother-in-law thinks. And I mean, 7 years is not that big of a difference. And again, I'm 34. Now we're talking about, and I just feel that the times now, I mean, we even had read that interview with Bendis that he mentioned, and I remember that this was a really hot topic on our Comic Book Legion chat, which is that kids don't really go on social media.
Yeah.
Remember how he said he had an interview where it just sounded like, dude, you're really disconnected from this world of like where young people are. And so that's
like,
that's
young people created the community of MySpace and then they move forward. Like, let's just start there. I genuinely believe because the whole thing, if
did
you've
you
ever
did
seen
you did you have
network,
a did you have a MySpace page?
I did have a MySpace page.
What was your song?
With all of my high school friends. Huh?
What was your song?
My what?
You know how on MySpace page you were able to have a song? That if they go to your page, you can...
I had a playlist. I didn't have a song. I had a playlist. There was, at some point, you could update it to where you could have an actual playlist. Mine, and this is, I mean, high school age here. I had 3 Days Grace on there. I had System of the Down. I had Slipknot. I had, gosh, what else? Who else did I have in there? I had Three Doors Down. I had all the alternate rock, punk, Fall Out Boy I had on there. I was a small, like, rocker punk back in my high school days. Alternate punk.
Yeah, well, I mean, to me, I think, like, I mean, I don't know when you went to high school, but, I mean, for me, I loved the early 2000s. I mean, I was high school 2000 to 2004. And I mean, I feel like that was kind of like a really good time for kind of like what you mean, like 3 Days Grace, Godsmack. But I know that like my song for the MySpace page was, I actually had Wait and Bleed from Slipknot. So I had Wait and Bleed, Slipknot. I know I changed it. I probably had Down with the Sickness with Disturbed.
Yeah. See, and that was the thing, too. You could always, like, you can embed, like, YouTube videos onto your page also.
Mm-hmm.
So I had all of the animated music videos from, like, Naruto and Full Metal Alchemist and all of the anime that I watch with Slipknot and 3 Days Grace attached to it. Yeah, I was a big anime rock nerd. Whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I genuinely think that he is not entirely connected to, you know, social media in the sense of who is on there. Now, this may be because of the parent that he is, and I'm not going to attack his family, but I'm just going to say because he is an older gentleman and because of the amount of kids that he has, I think the safest thing for him is to basically tell his kids, hey, no social media until you're this age. Like, basically. I feel like that's the kind of person Bendis would be. And so because he does that, he assumes, okay, every parent does this. And me and Abby, my wife, have had conversations
and that's quite possibly what he's doing.
Yeah. We've had conversations that, like, if we were to have kids, that might be something that we would do, which is understandable because of how social media is nowadays anyway, with how aggressive people are and everything else. But when you look at Instagram, when you look at the new thing, TikTok, these are all kids. Kids run social media. That's just how it is. And I genuinely think that he... Do you know what? Because of his dialogue, and I know Kevin would love this. I don't know if you would love this. But because of his dialogue, put him on JSA.
I could see that. I could see him do... I wouldn't want it, though. It hasn't been good what he's done recently, where I don't want... I mean, he's kind of, in a way, drastically changed a lot of the Legion of Superheroes, and I don't want someone going into a JSA to want to make changes. I legitimately want someone that is willing to embrace what makes them special and kind of just hit that on the head and talk about just how big they are in terms of the foundation of the DC universe and go that way. I don't need any retcon. Let's make these huge, crazy changes just to make changes so that it can be part of, like, my legacy. I think you being the writer of bringing them back is big enough of a deal where I don't need, you know, all this other stuff. So I don't know. So far, Bendis's DC stuff has been very ambitious, and I'm not looking for that right now. Right now, I think that his ambitious ideas, although in concept I've enjoyed, his execution has failed pretty exponentially. That I'm not looking for that, at least not right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's totally understandable. Sucks, right? I feel like there's, you know, yeah, it's kind of going in and out. I will say that I think
people
that Bendis is the kind of writer that I
frozen face right now, and he has a frozen face of disappointment.
Same with you. I
if only I can show people.
It looks like you're
sleeping. What Clay actually looks like. I'm actually going to hang up on Clay and try calling him again. Because
the big thing here that I think that
absolute
Bendis
disaster.
Should genuinely be on a book that is only 12 issues. You know, a lot of people think that King, a lot of people think
apparently
that Tom King is one of those writers that needs to have just a 12 issue miniseries or a maxi series,
like
or
a weirdo,
whatever, and that be it.
My son's here. Hi, Liam.
But it is something that not
Clay's
everybody.
Not here, so this show's gonna suck to edit. Clay,
Mark, you there?
You know what? I'm gonna call Clay on my cell phone because since we are not a professional podcast, we don't know what the hell we're doing. So let's see here. I'm gonna call him.
Hello.
Because this is professional podcasting at its finest.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, buddy. I have you on speaker while we're recording this disaster of a show, the last 20 minutes or so with the internet. I don't know why. I'm trying to call you, but it's not working.
That's weird. It says, I'm the only one in this one. Okay. So, you still recording?
Oh, yeah. I have the listeners hearing you.
Okay, cool. I basically just said while you, because I thought you were going to call me back and it would work.
Well, I did, but it didn't do it. I mean, I'll try it again.
Okay.
Let's see here. Invite. This is Comic Book Legion at its prime writer. See our show, the internet was fine. This show is kind of like a symbol of what Bendis's DC run has been. Spotty spotty and unstable.
Oh. Hey there?
Yeah, I see you, but I mean I don't know why, but I can't even hear you, man.
Yeah, I can't hear you either.
This is amazing.
I can hear you on the phone, but I can't hear you on the computer.
Oh, wait. I see you now on the computer. Hey. All right. Can you hear me, sir? Oh, you can't hear me. Fantastic. I'm going to call you on your phone again. We're just holy crap. Yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to answer it. See, now you're ignoring me.
There we go. Now I can hear
you. Are you ignoring me, sir? Are you ignoring my phone calls? All right. Yeah, I think we should end this. Because editing's not going to be fun. Oh, awesome. I think... Can you not hear me again?
Now I can hear you. I can hear you on the phone, but I can't hear you on the computer.
This is...
Oh, wait. Hold on. Hold on.
What's happening here? Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you.
You can hear me? Awesome. I just want you to know, because I'm not going to go nuts, I'm going to have everybody see just how bad it can actually get, so that people...
You're going to keep that all podcasting.
I'm keeping all of this in so that people who want to go into podcasting will know why they should never do it.
Oh my gosh. No, but before I was saying that Bendis, a lot of people think that he should be almost how people think that Tom King should be, in the sense of only staying to like 12 issues on whatever story he wants to pitch.
I mean, I just think that that's a preferred... That, to me, is a preferred way of storytelling because... Oh, God, he froze. It's a preferred way of storytelling for me because it avoids fillers. And I do not like fillers. Damn it, Clay. He's frozen. Clay's frozen!
Now you're starting... No, you're call Clay, I can hear you now. I can hear you.
Dude,
I can hear you
hear me?
And see you. I can hear you and see
oh,
you
God.
On the computer. You're good.
Are you sure? Dude, this is horrible. I don't even know what to do.
I don't know.
Did you hear what I said?
Now, that is a preferred way of storytelling for you?
I prefer it to avoid the fillers. That's my short way of saying it to, damn it, you froze again.
Yeah.
Clay?
Oh, my God. You froze, but I can hear you. Oh, there you go. There you go.
Can you hear me?
I can see you moving now. Yeah.
And if you leave me now, you take away the biggest part of me. Ooh, baby, please. I'm doing my inner Butters right now from South Park. Dude, I don't know what to say anymore. This internet has reached the boomer.
That
I don't know what to do.
I think we hit the point where the internet is basically saying, hey, you can only have 45 minutes of an episode. I think that's what they're trying to say. Because every single short episode that we have, we're good. But every long episode, I feel like it always starts to strain a little bit. So,
I think it's since I have a lot of family here staying at my house with my dad after the surgery and stuff, I think I just have 9 people on Wi-Fi and they're probably all streaming something.
Nice.
So I have a feeling that's what it could be, because I'm not sure what's happening right now. Anyways,
gotta love these times, man. You gotta love it. But hey, maybe this will be some sort of entertainment for somebody.
Yeah,
a full 4 minutes of confusion.
Yeah. Now I've had the timestamp like 9 times where you were frozen, and I was actually talking, thinking you were listening to me. But then when the freezing finished, you were actually still saying your point. I'm like, oh my God. I'm actually going to have to listen to this show again to actually edit.
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right.
Yeah, well, so we're part of the Nerdy Legion podcast network where, you know, you can just listen to all these other fantastic shows where they talk about comics more efficiently than what you just heard right now. But, hey, you know what? I blame Wanda. Wanda did this, and that's why... The show is all over the place, because just like the characters are out of the characters are all outing, they're all acting out of, you know, out of character in a sense. Well, this is us here being flustered because we don't know what, you know, parallel podcast world we're in right now.
You have 9 people, I have 6 people all on the internet right now. They're all, this is basically the time that they wake up, they're starting their day, so it could be both of us that is to blame here.
Okay.
But you can find us on Twitter at the CB_Legion for the Comic Book Legion Twitter account. You can find me at Fanboy Clay on Instagram and on Twitter. Where can they find you, Mark?
You can find me at Mark Reads Comics. Liam, Clay says hi. Yeah.
I just see his head just like slowly peek to the camera.
No, he can see you. It's just I have the window down. Yeah, so you can find me at Mark Reads Comics, where I am going to post on my headline. I'm just going to quote Wanda and just say no more podcasts so that all the podcasts just disappear.
Hey, not all of them. Let ours still be there.
That's true, because what are you going to do at 5 o'clock in the morning? Being awake for 37 hours. Yeah, so, all right. I don't know what it is anymore. Just listen to us. Meltdown.
Please.
Please. Watch this be our most highly downloaded episode, where we just decided
it's gonna
to
be
reach...
Great.
We just reached, like, maybe with doing House of M... We probably just reached a whole new demographic, and this is going to be by far our worst show ever. So, I mean, so it's fitting.
Oh, that's going to be awesome. Yeah. That is going to be great.
All right.
I'm going to love it.
Okay.
All right, guys. See you later.
See you. Bye, guys. All right.